And we got two guests for you here as we will take your phone calls this hour. Jim Lansdale is with us, of course. Jim is with the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization. And Peter Putkammer is with us, of course, the producer and the creator of the program Killing Bigfoot. And we'll be back with both of them and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Peter Von Putkammer. He is with us, and Jim Lansdale is with us as well. Peter, for people who want to watch the program Killing Bigfoot, where do they go? How do they find it?
It's Destination America. You can check your local listings. Destination America has a channel finder where you can put your zip code in. You can find out where it's playing in your area. Right now, it's happening Saturday nights, 10 Eastern, 9 Central. And it's aired, the first episode has aired, and the next show will be on the 11th. I'm sure there's going to be reruns of the pilot and the first season premiere as well coming up.
And you've got six shows, and hopefully it'll get renewed, right?
That would be
That's
nice.
That's the name of the game.
You bet.
Let's go back to Jim now. Jim, I wanted you to react to Farlan Huff and his thoughts, of course, as some other people think. Let's not kill this creature. Go ahead.
Well, you know, everybody has their own opinion. Unfortunately, his is uneducated. You can't sit around and behind a computer and draw a conclusion when these people are calling me and I'm going to their homes and they're scared to death to go outside. So it's unfortunate that Farlan needs to get out and educate himself a little bit more as far as being around what these animals do and what they're capable of doing. He said that he was talking about that one that kind of bluff charged him, and kind of felt comfortable there at the end, I suppose. That's not an aggressive Bigfoot. I mean, that happens quite frequently, and that's not the ones we're after. We've been bluff charged a bunch of times. I have. But, you know, here's the thing. It gets back down to if a Bigfoot gets you, you're not going to be able to tell the story anyway. So we have a difference here of opinion of what's aggressive and what's not aggressive, and the people that are afraid for their lives and their children, their dogs, and their grandchildren, and he sees something laying on a road at night with a red light. That's hardly a comparison of what we do.
And again, the creatures, how tall are they?
Down here, they're anywhere from 6.5 to maybe 8 feet. It would be a real tall one. Ours is not as robust here in the South. They're sleeker, probably 350 max, maybe 400 pounds. And, I mean, there's exceptions to the rule. There might be some that are heavier, but most of them are thinner. Females are much shorter, probably by a foot, foot and a half. They're built differently, narrow shoulders, wider hips for birth. Obviously, the juvenile, they're easy to tell because they're so much smaller. So, I mean, it's the males are, some of the males are pretty good size. The ones that I see that are the three-toed, that are the nuisance animals, I saw one run from a lady's house one night with thermal, and it was real slender. I would say maybe 200 pounds, maybe 6.5 foot tall.
Is there any chance that there's some crazy people dressed up in costumes doing this, which is not very smart?
George, there's always that chance that there's somebody that stupid that would do it. Now, let me explain this. One lady's house that I saw the one run from behind her house with thermal, her house sits on 1 acre there of clear property, completely surrounded by thick pine thicket that you can barely traverse during the daytime. I mean, it's tough to navigate. What they were doing was coming into her home, and when she would turn the light on or whatever, they would run and go through these thickets and hide. Well, she called the police out, and this, I'm not knocking the police officers, but they would come out, and of course, they'd say, well, we don't know there's not anybody here, we can't find any sign. But these creatures were there, and it's actually, one night the cops did come out, or Department, Sheriff's Department, and they actually saw one run off from behind this lady's house. But
I would guess if there was somebody in a costume, and he got shot at and killed, that you could not be held responsible for that.
No.
I don't think you would be. I mean,
no.
Some people think, Jim, that this creature might be extra-dimensional or coming from another planet. What do you think? I think it's more indigenous to this planet. I think it's a creature on this planet.
I think you're right, George. I think it's indigenous to this planet. Some of the guys that you've seen in the park, Farley's one of these guys too. I mean, he's the kind that he didn't admit it, but he thinks they cloak and things like that, and they sit around and play flute music and blindfold themselves, you know, and they think it's a docile animal that's going to come up and play with them, and they're completely wrong. I mean, and the problem is, they don't know any better because they don't have the experience as we do.
Well, then that's an important case. Peter, there is experience here and lots of it.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of what the eyewitnesses are seeing, we also had some crew members, you know, again, everyone's going at this with a different, you know, open mind and maybe some skeptics on the crew as we came in, you know, but as we went along, you know, things were happening. There was one night a surveillance light came on, and a producer and her assistant, who's a veteran, they both saw individually something large, moving, with a thick neck and wide shoulders. And when they sized it up, where they had seen the background, there was a horse trailer, so it was roughly 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
And they couldn't...
Huge.
And I have to say that all the hunters and the crew were off, you know, hundreds of yards away in the other direction. And again, nobody is going to be dressing up in a suit knowing that there's hunters with loaded guns.
Nobody with a brain.
So that literally, like, it rules out so much hoaxing when you think about the fact that there are people with weapons willing to shoot a Bigfoot. And I have to tell you that these guys, Jim and the GCBRO, are extremely safety conscious. Jim is kind of a sergeant at arms there. He is making sure that everybody is following protocol. He brings them to their locations. He tells them when and where they can move. People are on walkies because he wants them to, you know, to report back if they've... He doesn't want anybody running up and going after, you know, a Bigfoot. Everyone has to know where they are at all times.
Sure.
And they've never had any injuries in 20 years. So it's not just like, you know, a bunch of rednecks with guns out there flailing about in the woods. It's not like that. It's run like pretty much like a military operation.
What kind of technology do you have out there, Jim? Do you have like thermal imaging or anything like that?
Sure. We have thermal, and we also have night vision, generation 3. And which is mandatory for some hunters to have, but it's also good for location. The thermal that I used was just a recorder. It was not a weapon sight. And I saw quite a few weird things with that thermal, as a matter of fact. And it's a very important piece of equipment to have, especially when you're at night. Some of the areas that we go into in these thickets, George, the canopy of trees are just so thick that night vision really won't help. You have to have thermals because you're looking for the heat.
Right, exactly. When I was younger, Jim, my first knowledge of this was not Bigfoot, but the abominable snowman in the Himalayas. Are we talking about the same kind of creature?
You know, I don't know. I would think something maybe similar. You know, I'm really adamant about the Pacific Northwest creatures and our creatures, the Bigfoot, are being different because, you know, I know there's similarities as well, but then again, ours is so much sleeker because it's so much hotter. Ours did not have to follow the game trails or the herds because ours are here all the time. So, I mean, those are more robust. You can add, well, the deer up there are bigger, you know, and bigger than ours. So I know they eat, they have to because of the cold, of the temperature, but, yeah, I think there's some similarities with the Yeti, the abominable snowman, well, which is the Yeti, and the Pacific Northwest Bigfoot, the one in British Columbia, the ones down here, the skunk ape. I think they all have some type of similarities, just maybe different sizes, maybe a little different. But if you recall, George, years ago, you know, when the Fountain Monster first came out, and got millions of people involved in Bigfoot because that was so intriguing to everybody. You know, scared the crap out of them, but it was interesting. The Boggy Creek Monster, the Fountain Monster, only had 3 toes. And why that's not mentioned over and over and over, I don't know. But it only had 3 toes. And my place down here, I am, I'm only 70 miles from Boggy Creek. I'm kind of situated in between the Red River and the Sabine River. and I spend a lot of time on the Sabine River where there's a lot of sightings there. And, I mean, I had a guy, you wouldn't believe the calls that I get and the text messages and the emails that I get of people that, that know that I'm into Bigfoot, and they either have a problem or know somebody that has a problem. I'm not saying every day, but like last month I had three. And, I mean, that's quite a few reports of aggressive Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot. Let's take some calls for both of you here. Let's start by going to Livingston, Montana. Vince is with us, west of the Rockies. Vince, go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, Vince.
Your guests say my son and I encountered one of these creatures while we were out grouse hunting about 7 miles northwest of Trout Creek, Montana, about 7 miles from the Idaho border.
Mm-hmm.
In 1987, September 7th.
What did you see? What did it look like?
Well, we jumped it. We got off the three-wheeler, moved into the forest to hunt blue grouse, and fairly quickly, it jumped out of a thicket. I am under the impression that maybe we jumped it. It was sleeping or resting or something, but it was definitely scared of us. And it ran up the hill, and we got a good look at it, probably 30 yards away, 30 to 35 yards away. Heavy pine forest, not super dog hair thick, but, you know, good thick forest with mm-hmm. a lot of brush on the ground. Got a good clear look at its face, and it was definitely a scared. I mean, this animal was scared. I don't even know if I call it an animal.
Did it have hair on the face?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it had not hair on the face itself. You know, not on the features of the face itself. I mean, it had a definite face. It wasn't like a bear or anything. And, of course, everybody has said, you know, there's a reluctance to talk about this, too, when you run into these people laugh at you. But, you know, they say, well, was it an elk? Was it a moose? Was it a grizzly bear? No, it was none of the above. You know, knew what those looked like. And this thing, it didn't go on all fours, but it did scramble. It was a slight uphill. And as it got further into the timber, you know, the sighting became sketchier and sketchier, but you could see the trees moving, like it was grabbing the trees or it was bumping the trees as it went away.
Did you feel threatened at any point?
No, not at all. It didn't charge. Neither one of us had any compunction to shoot this thing. I mean, it would have been like murder to do that. You know, it'd been like jumping a homeless person. It's just not something that even entered any of our minds. We were freaked out. We left immediately, went back down, got on the three-wheeler, drove out. Got about 5 miles down on the main road and stopped and talked about it. And, you know, what are we going to say? What did that really happen? I mean, you know, what did we just see?
Well, that's a good question. What do you think you saw?
Well, I think we saw a Sasquatch.
No question about it.
I know it was.
Not a bear, nothing like that.
No, it was not a bear, a moose, an elk, a black bear. It was none of the creatures that are indigenous to Montana. None of the above. It was a big bipedal hominid hairy creature.
That's another great story. And, Jim, let me ask you, does the group come with tranquilizer guns or anything like that?
No, not at all. And reason being, where we hunt, George, in these thickets, it's so thick. There's no way that you can tranquilize, shoot a dart gun in some of these thickets. And even if you did, we'd have to have the right dosage, and then you have to wait 10 to 15 minutes for the dosage to take effect. And you can imagine this creature can be 2 miles from you by the time that the drug takes effect, and can be in a thicket at night. And then, you know, you have to have a crew with you to get him out of this drug. We never would find him. And there's a good possibility we'd kill him and not find him, or, you know, just injure him.
Would you shoot at it if it was, let's say, just in a tree or something?
No, because that wouldn't be the one we're after, you know? I had a guy, last night I was emailing back and forth with a guy, and he said, if you want to kill a Bigfoot, I want you to come up here, and I won't tell you the state it was in. He said, I know where they are. I'm a game warden. I can take you there, and we can go kill a Bigfoot. And my reply to him was, is that, look, I'm not out to kill a Bigfoot. That's not my goal. What I want to do is kill one of these aggressive Bigfoot that needs to be taken out. That's what I'm after. I don't want the small. I don't want the female. I want this aggressive one. Farland said, well, how would we know and we'd shoot anything in the dark? See, that's inexperience. He doesn't know. I mean, don't compare us to you because you're not us. You've never been in the woods with us. You don't know what we know. So,
at what point do you think, Jim, that you will finally find a Bigfoot?
Well, it could be at any time. Anytime we go out, there is that possibility that you could have a shot at an aggressive Bigfoot. George, I have an area that I go to, and I have one that would follow me around all the time, a male. And he's one of the aggressive ones. He was kind of afraid of me and because he didn't know what I was doing.
Does he grunt at you or make sounds?
Yeah. He would break branches and follow me and peek around trees. I never got a good look at him to take a picture of him until one day I was sitting on this lady's back porch and he walked out. And when they walk towards you, this is how they conceal themselves. They'll walk towards you real slowly. You don't see them because our eyes are trained to see movement from right to left and not to come back and forth. And he turned sideways and took three steps and looked at me. And he's probably 50 yards from me when I took a picture of him with a little camera that I had. But he was letting me know right then that, hey, this is mine. And stay out of it. And yeah, I've been hooped and hollered at in there a time or two.
Huh. And again, how tall are they? 8 feet?
Yeah, this one's probably, he wasn't quite 8 foot. I think he was probably about seven and a half foot. But his bottom jaw stuck out. His, he had an underbite, pretty exaggerated underbite,
yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Are they muscular?
Oh, yeah. Definitely muscular. Kind of like a bodybuilder.
Wow.
As they get older, they get more robust and just like a gorilla.
Have you come across an elderly one? I mean, were they graying?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There was one at our place that my son walked up on. He was down doing a leaf collection for agriculture class, and he came eyeball to eyeball with one, a gray one. And then I got a glimpse of him one time, and then one of my hunters, he was deer hunting down there, and he saw him walking down a road, and then a four-wheeler came, and he darted off into the pine thicket.
Peter, let me ask you, with your program, Killing Bigfoot, have you come close to having something on video?
Yes, we have. You guys can check out our website, www.killingbigfoot.com, and we have something there that says, see the trailer, Bigfoot, ? And all that. And we, quite by accident, we were not filming. You know, we do dramatic recreations for the show, and we do have a suit that we use for these dramatic recreations. We want to show people.
Be careful,
you know,
somebody doesn't shoot at you.
Well, that was an issue, actually. We had to be very careful how we did recreations because, yeah,
absolutely,
there is a chance that could happen. So we're trying to show and get, just for the purpose of the show, show a glimpse of what it is people are seeing, right? But in this case, suit is in a box. Crew is back at this church. We're waiting for some eyewitnesses to show up. Now, here's a forest where the caretakers of that church, well, they actually were workers. They were working on building a kind of a fountain kind of a thing there. And I sent a couple of hunters in the woods. One of them had a GoPro on his head, and he got some footage on there. You can see it in that trailer, what we saw, and that was not staged. We actually got it by accident, and we blew it up 400%, and here's this bipedal form moving.
That's exciting. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with a couple special guests. Jim Lansdale, of course, he is with the Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research Organization, and Peter Putkammer, who, of course, is the creative force behind the program Killing Bigfoot. Peter, what do you think of people who are outright frauds, who will get a Bigfoot costume and stuff it with deer guts and stuff like that and take it on tour to try to make a profit?
Well, I guess their tradition of showmen in America goes back to beyond P.T. Barnum, and there's stories. I know I did a show on the Jersey Devil many years ago, and somebody took a kangaroo and put some wings on it and put it on display, and people paid good money to go in and see it.
Yeah.
So I think whenever there's something like this, a mystery creature, people are going to find ways to exploit what people imagine it is and want to get a good look at it. You know, and part of what this Bigfoot show is about, Killing Bigfoot on Destination America, is to start asking the questions about, you know, in order for science to take this thing seriously. I mean, Professor Sykes at Oxford just had dozens of hair specimens and was unable to, you know, come up with definitive proof of a Bigfoot or a Yeti, and said, look,
they couldn't identify it, right?
No, they got, well, they got hair samples of dogs and deer and horses and cows and potentially a polar bear that was extinct, but that was disproven then. What he said is we need a body or a piece of a body. And
yeah.
This is from scientists. Smithsonian has something they call a voucher specimen, is required to prove a new species. So it is a fact that's what you would need. And then the GCBRO believe Bigfoot could be protected, but there's no impetus to protect this animal because everyone thinks it's a legend right now.
Let's go to Jackson, Mississippi. We've got Denver here. Denver, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thanks for this opportunity.
You are very welcome.
Time, I would like to talk about my experience with Bigfoot while I was in the Air Force.
Okay.
At Forbes Air Force Base, Topeka, Kansas. A friend of mine was driving from the base, headed to Kansas City to party that weekend. So we decided to take the back route. This is 1969. Never heard about Bigfoot before. So my friend was driving. He called my name. He said, "What is that?" I looked over. I said, "Man, that's got to be a ghost, a spirit. No man that big. It was big and hairy, okay?" So I said, "We get back to the base. We're not going to discuss this because they'll think we're crazy, you know?" And we agreed not to discuss it. But then years later, I hear about the same kind of description. Like about 8 foot tall, you know, the Bigfoot character. Okay. Comment about a friend of mine in Scottsboro, Alabama. She out washing clothes one night 2000, year 2000. And she heard this noise coming down from the small mountain she lived under. And she saw this big hairy creature, smelled like sulfur. And she screamed and just ran in the bottom of the middle of the street. And a cat just screamed, ran in the house, okay? And then Riley Martin, my friend, who passed away a couple years
ago. Oh, yeah. We've had Riley on the program.
That was my friend. Riley's on the mothership. He saw Bigfoot. And a lot of the Bigfoot are put here for a reason. They're used by extraterrestrial. I like your comments.
All right. Jim, take it away.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, well, I've been doing this over 25 years, and I go to areas of activity. What areas of activity means is that they have been, Bigfoot have been sighted there more than once.
Right.
Numerous times, as a matter of fact. I have never, ever seen a UFO. I'm sorry. And I've looked. I mean, I've spent numerous nights and looked, and I just hadn't found any. And one other point that I want to make, too, about, let's get back to these people thinking that they're human. Animals' eyes shine. Or they glow when they're shined with a light. Bigfoot's eyes, when they're shined with a light, they glow. When you shine human eyes with a light, they don't glow.
They don't.
So that's a piece of information that these people that claim these are all human need to understand. Our eyes do not glow. Bigfoot eyes, I know for a fact, glow. And depending on the time of day or night, depending on the light used, depends on what color they
had. Take a look at the trailer that Peter sent us. It's at coasttocoastam.com. It is a video of what is a creature seeming to jump a fence. Is it, Peter?
Yes. Yes. Jim, you can talk about that. It's you and M.K. Davis have analyzed this.
Right.
A fence climber.
Excuse me, Peter. This was taken in East Texas in about year 2000. And what these guys had done, they were smart. They kind of figured out how to hide the cameras, and they would put them in a 5-gallon bucket and run long electrical leads or whatever. But they would point the camera into a mirror and then point the mirror at the area that they wanted to look at. This particular creature, when you see him, he's going down the fence row, and he's going to a place where they kept a bunch of tires in chains. And it was for some reason that
these Bigfoot creatures either fought over or played with these tires. So he goes down, and then you see him coming back. And if you listen to sound to the video, you can actually hear the guineas kick up, and that's what runs him back. He hears the guineas, he comes back, and then he walks and he strides over the fence. And that is a Bigfoot. Hmm. And there's four of them there that I've seen on film in that same area.
It almost looks like, Jim, a little human head on top of that creature when it's on all fours.
Right. Do you know that that fence is 5 foot tall, George?
Wow. Popped right over.
So, you know, you figure the inseam that it has to have. You know, like I've got a 32-inch inseam, and there's no way. I could straddle a 4 foot fence, let alone a 5.
Rapid City, South Dakota, Bruce's turn on Coast to Coast. Bruce, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Sure.
George and guests. I've had a secondhand story of a baby Bigfoot here in the Black Hills, and I have a firsthand story from a man that was predator calling up there with another man, and they had an aggressive one after him for a while. He was yelling and making noises, and there was a little skiff of snow around there. It was warmer that day, but they had a picture of a foot next to the Bigfoot, and there was several pictures of Bigfoot tracks there.
How many toes, do you know?
It was five.
Five toes.
It was melted to a certain extent, but it was five. It was looked like it was five all across the front.
Jim, how big are the feet?
Well, it depends, George. That one that you see crossing that fence there, he's probably got about a 14 and a half inch foot. The biggest I've seen is approximately 20 inches, and I would estimate, according to the formula that I use, that he's probably about 8 foot, 2 inches, somewhere in that area there. But, I mean, I haven't taken pictures from juveniles that are 4 inches all the way up to 20 inches, so just depends on the size of the creature.
Are they too big to climb in trees?
No, as a matter of fact, they're not. Now, the older ones, the bigger ones, probably they would have to have some lower heavy hanging limbs that would support them. The young have no problem at all climbing the tree, just like a kid would, you know. They scamper up those trees like a squirrel. As a matter of fact, there's a video of one that's real important, and you can actually see this one. He goes up a tree, and he's swinging back and forth, and he's screaming, and it comes from the same area with this video that you just saw, and the reason being is because they were feeding them, and they hadn't left his food out. He was mad because they hadn't fed him.
Let's go to Virginia in Everett, Washington now, west of the Rockies. Hello, Virginia.
Hi. Yes, I've been researching these critters for 40 years. They're mentioned in the Bible in Deuteronomy 2:20, and they're called Zamzummim. And the first half of the book of Joshua, he goes into the Valley of Hebron, and apparently he kills them all, but I think some of them escape. They're found up in Russia. They're found all over the world except Hawaii and the Antarctic, which is Hawaii's too far to swim, and Antarctic is too cold. But the research that I've done, there's a Dr. Melba.
Ketchum.
You're right. Okay, here on the Olympic Peninsula Research Lab. And she found that 70% of the mother's DNA is human. The father's DNA is too long and complicated for them to figure out yet. So they are related to us in some way or another. And not all humans do have the Neanderthal blood. It's only those around the Mediterranean and over as far as Turkey and up into Central Europe. Those are the only ones, and they are the only ones that have a certain DNA where if the mother's blood is different from the child, it will turn on the child and kill it. So they developed shots to neutralize that, and we can now have children that have the DNA from the Neanderthals.
And let me ask you this, Jim. That's a great story, too. Mm-hmm. What about capturing, like, a baby Bigfoot? Is that ever possible?
Well, George, I guess anything would be possible, but the probability of finding a baby without his mother and possibly others around, you know,
right,
would be difficult. Now, I have seen some juveniles that were about 4 foot tall, and they stepped out and looked at me like, what in the world are you? And I was down on the river, and I didn't see any big ones other than that afternoon. And across the river on the other side, there was a big one, came out. We watched him for 10 minutes, Bobby and me and his boys and another fellow, for 10 minutes. He couldn't see us. We were under the bridge on the other side, about 150 yards from him. And he just stood there and surveyed the area there, looking around. And people said, well, Lod, you know, why didn't you shoot him? He's not what we want. He wasn't aggressive. He was just there. But this, what was unique about these little ones and how I got to see some of them, down close to the river, they would grab those little trees, little willow trees, and they would just whip them back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I saw that, and I kind of sneaked around where I could see, and sure enough, that one was sitting there, and he had his back to me, and he was just whipping that tree for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it was a signal. Maybe it was not. And another thing I want to talk about, too, is language. We talk about language. You know, is it a language or is it a communication? And I've got it recorded as well. And it sounds to me like it's grunts and whatever, and I've never heard anything like the Sierra sound. None of my bunch has, as a matter of fact, down here in the South. But, you know, even birds communicate. So
that's right.
I mean, is it a language or is it a communication? I think it's just communication.
We've been playing over the years a tape of what we think is a Bigfoot. It's like a howling sound, like a train almost in the background. Do they sound that way?
Yes. As a matter of fact, down here in the South, that's what you hear. You'll hear that deep howling sound, and then the coyotes will kind of jump in with it.
Yeah. When they're in the area, do animals tend to flock out of there?
They sure do. It's amazing when they come into an area, even the crickets and the tree frogs and the locusts go quiet.
They all stop,
everything
don't they?
Kind of shuts up. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be a type of a predator to make everything stop, you know?
Let's go to Georgia. Nate's with us. Nate, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. This is Nate, and I had a quick question about Native American history.
All
if there's any evidence of Bigfoot in Indian pictographs or artwork or anything like that that anyone has ever discovered.
Go ahead, Peter.
Yes, it's kind of how I got into this whole field is that in the Pacific Northwest, I'm really familiar with wild man, the woods, wild woman, the woods, and the stories there. It's wild woman will, you know, steal the children, you know, from any children that just happen to go in the outskirts of the village can get picked up by Zuniqua, put in, she uses pine pitch to blind the children, throws them in her basket and carries them off. And you see this depicted in the art, and you see this in the dances where they're reliving that over and over again is the theft of these children. And we've seen other, we've used some Native American illustrations to talk about traditions in the South where Bigfoot is known as well.
You know, with all these creatures all over the place, I would think in time you're going to find something. You're going to find something pretty dramatic, and I hope you get it on tape.
Well, we're getting some cool stuff. We've got some interesting stuff in the show. I think the GoPro footage we got is very compelling. Again, it's not definitive. As we said, you know, video, especially these days, people are more and more doubtful about what they see online, and they go, oh, it's been doctored or whatever. And so that brings us back to this this need for some proof, a body. And, you know, the hunters have said, you know, we don't like to kill anything. We feel bad. I mean, we're going to eat the food if we have a deer or whatever. Obviously, we're going to eat it. But, you know, it's they do that with some respect.
And again, we can watch Killing Bigfoot where?
Killing Bigfoot on Destination America. Check your local listings. It's on Saturday night. It's coming up on the 11th again, the new episode. And you'll be seeing other episodes throughout the week.
All right. Good luck, Peter. Thank you, Jim. Thank you for everything. And just be safe, you folks, when you're out there. Just be safe, indeed. For Nathan Staton, Gina Salvati, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.